finish up what we were talking about yesterday. So we've been talking a little bit about the responsibilities that go in both directions of the employer to the employee and the employee to the employer, and how there are obligations of the employee to work with his full strength for the employer, but at the same time, there are still limitations as to what the employer can demand of the employee. And we've seen that those limitations, first of all, are affected by minig, or by dinah d'malchusa. So even if the Torah has one standard, still there might be modifications to that standard. A prominent example, which will be a sugya in our Gemara eventually, has to do with just the hours themselves. I mean, dinah Torah, a polo works from morning till night, and nowadays we don't define our working hours that way, and that would seem to become a dominant definition because of the prevailing minig. And we discussed a little bit also the idea that the boss cannot work his heart, he cannot work his workers in a way that's demeaning, in a way that is dehumanizing. We discussed a little bit the application of the Yisr of Losir de Vafarach, how that, and if that, and how that would apply to a poel, and also some of the ramifications of the concept of poel yachal achzer v'chatzi yom, the fact that the Torah seems to give the worker at least a theoretical right to pull out of the job at any point, and how that affects things. So when we were finishing off yesterday, we were talking about the Chiddush of Rabbi Aaron Levine, Zichus Adikovach, and his statement where he suggested that it would basically be off limits for a boss to say that the workers can't use the phone for brief personal calls. That if they made a deal like that when they started, okay, but if that was not a part of the original stipulation, so then the boss can't come in and say that, because there are various reasons why that should be true. One is, he says, based on the Mishnah in Bava Kamma, at the very end of Bava Kamma in Kuf Yud Bet, that we find there are certain dinim where we give certain privileges to the worker. Specifically in that Mishnah, it's that the worker is allowed to keep the excess material that's shaved off of whatever he's crafting in certain contexts, where it's a relatively small amount. And the understanding was that if there's something that's not really a loss to the employer, it's not much skin off his back, and it benefits the worker, then we assume the employer always wants to benefit the worker in such a case, because you'll get him a more effective worker. And then in that context, he noted also that his understanding of the contemporary relevance of Pol Yachal Achzer V'Chatzi Yom, nowadays it's not so practically true all the time that a Pol can actually quit, but basically it's a psychological benefit, and that manifests itself in other ways today. So to say, for example, that somebody can't take any personal calls, he can't check to see what the urgent message is from his wife when it comes in during the day, so that will cut him off from the world in a very demeaning kind of fashion, will make him feel shackled, and therefore, if there is such a notion that you can't be an Eved, that presumably is included. So how do you know how far you have to go in providing these benefits? So he assumes these two dinim are related, and says that to the point where it continues to be beneficial to the employer to have an employee who is happy in that way, so who's working productively, so then it applies. But to whatever extent it starts to take away from the benefit of the employer, it's not just that he has a productive employee, but he has an indulgent employee who's not really working or is causing others not to be working, so then this would no longer apply. So I just wanted to add one other point that he mentions in terms of this. So he also assumes that the idea that the worker should be able to take personal calls could basically be inferred from the following scenario, the following thought experiment. Let's say you're going to say that the boss is going to tell his worker he can't take personal calls, he can't deal with personal phone calls during the daytime. And for a second, let's separate out the question of whether he's using work property. Let's say even on his cell phone, the worker is told by the boss, you can't take personal calls. So let's say the worker says like this, okay, you know what? Every day from 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock, I want to quit. I have the right to quit. So I'm going to quit at 2 o'clock, and I'll come back and ask you to rehire me at 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock. And during that time, when I'm not working for you, I'll take off that time and deal with all my personal business. Now, to some extent, he may have that right.
Not totally, because if the Post can point out that even if we say that the boss has to give the worker the upper hand in terms of quitting, that doesn't mean he has to hire him back. It's not that he gets the upper hand in terms of everything. So he has the right to quit because of this idea of eliminating Yisrael Avadim. But it doesn't necessarily translate into an automatic right to get hired back. However, practically speaking, it's not really going to make sense for the boss, who's going to need somebody else now, to go searching for a different person. If he's going to hire somebody back, he might as well hire this guy back. It's the most logical choice. So when this guy says, I'm going to quit at 2, and I'm going to come back for my job at 3, even though halakhically the boss has no obligation to rehire him back, strictly speaking, it's going to make more sense for him to hire him back than to hire anybody else. He's going to start taking out ads in the paper and looking for a different person and training somebody. It's just not going to make sense. So practically speaking, it's not going to make sense for him to do anything else other than rehire this guy. So he could theoretically quit every day for some defined period of time and then get his job back, and that's the way he's going to get his practical calls. That's the way he'll get his personal calls in during that time. So if that's what he's going to do in order to get it, it's not going to make any sense for the boss to require him to go through this whole process. Okay, yes, quit and come back and reapply at 3 o'clock. That's not going to be in anyone's interest. That's not going to make sense. So since theoretically there is this mechanism, there is this alternate route the worker could do in order to get this benefit, but ultimately it's not going to be in anyone's interest to force him to actually go through that path, so therefore it makes sense to say that that's an implicit right, that he could just have this right without having to go through that whole story, and therefore these very small, manageable benefits, that's what he wants to suggest, should be permissible to the worker. It's an interesting svara as well. Hi.
Would he lose his right to quit?
Theoretically, yes. But the question is, what do we mean by lose money? So there's different ways in which
we...
So that's not necessarily considered to be a loss. It is true that if it's a davar ha'avod, if he's actually causing him a loss of existing money, then yes, he would, or even a loss of, not money, but any kind of irreplaceable opportunity, he would lose his his right to quit. But it's not clear that that's really the case here. You know, he'll get some other worker to do the work later. It's just a pain. So why would he want to do that? So it's not going to make sense for him to do that. So in real life, he'll end up rehiring this guy. So why are you going to go through this charade every day, where every day I'll quit, make a whole dramatic show, and then come back and reapply and get hired again? What's the point? Let's just skip that whole drama and just give him the right to begin with. Hi.
If the guy's going to be leaving every single day from 2 to 4, doesn't it make sense for the employer to just have him quit for good and just look for someone else, because he's losing.
I mean, if it's really going to play out that way.
Day,
right.
Yeah.
So, but the point is that this is really a thought experiment. No one's actually going to do this. But that at any point in which he would do that, he'd say, listen, this is the kind of work arrangement we could have where I could end up quitting and coming back and quitting and coming back. And theoretically, I could do that because the facts will add up in my favor. So since it doesn't make sense for either of us to have to actually do that, why don't we just take it as a given that these minor manageable benefits exist. That's how he wanted to suggest. A very fascinating approach. Hi.
It's almost like the worker is like forcing the employer to keep him, because he would rather not have his employee quit for 2 hours each day, but he's being forced by the
right.
worker.
Right, that's essentially... Right, that's essentially...
That was like the other way around, that he's forcing.
Correct. Yeah, that's how it comes out. But still, it only makes sense if it's manageable. The boss is not going to put up with this if it was something crazy. You know, if the worker says that I get to spend 5 hours a day watching movies because otherwise I'll quit every day and reapply, so the boss says I'm not going to rehire a guy like you. It doesn't make sense. So it goes back to the same net benefit point, that it only works out if it's something that's reasonable, and that when all is said and done, the boss would say, yes, I'd rather have a worker like you stay at the job and take a few minutes off to the phone rather than have to go through this, then it makes sense. If he's not really going to be a productive worker with his demands, so then the logic's not going to follow. But it's an interesting application. Okay, so that's just some of the points that Rabbi Levine was machadish in terms of the application of some of these concepts. I don't think that was me this time. Yesterday it was me. But so that was some of the points that he was machadish in terms of some of the applications of these concepts in the Gemara to the modern-day workplace. It's interesting to note, just if you want to say that these Yisurim of Losir Devafarach and Avodas Aved are applicable in these circumstances, so then we have an extra Chumrah, because the Torah also then goes on to say a little bit later in that same parak that you can't allow anyone else to do this either, to put someone in a situation of backbreaking labor, and the Rambam codifies that in the Halacha as well. So then you have to figure out what exactly are your obligations in terms of cooperating with such a scenario, even if it's not your idea. So that's going to be a very complicated practical point, but it's just interesting to note to whatever extent there is such a din, so then there's also a correlate din that you're not supposed to allow it to happen, and that could have even broader ramifications. Alex?
Did anyone suggest that the answer is not only on the employer, but also the employee to subject?
So that's an interesting question that we kind of posed in the context, during this Zman, we posed that in the context of Pol Yochel Achzu B'Chatzi Ayom. So if they are parallel related concepts, I think there might be what to talk about. Right, that you see here, it's a little bit different, and it's not the same pasuk. And also, presumably, it's hard to say it that way because, to whatever extent the poll is mochel, it kind of changes things. So it's a little hard to fit it exactly into the equation because it's subjective to begin with. But in the context of the poll yochel achzer idea, so as we mentioned yesterday, so the Ritva in his Tshuvas takes the position that the worker can contract out of it, but not everyone agreed. The Shach disagreed, and there is a logic to say that it's not only a right that the employer has to give to the employee, but that maybe it's also an issur on the worker. The worker is not allowed to make himself an Evet. And why would you say that? You could say it for two different reasons. One reason is you could say, really, it is a benefit to the worker, but we still can't allow him to be mochel because then the whole benefit will go away. You know, for example, we have in America a concept of minimum wage. The workers have to get a certain minimum amount. But if we say that the workers could be mochel on this, then the whole concept goes away. It's only going to make sense if we say it's an absolute minimum that the workers have no right to suspend. Otherwise, everyone will just be pressured to suspend that right, otherwise not going to get a job. So the whole point of such a law is to say that nobody gets employed at less than this, and that way no one is pressured to pass up on that right. So that's possibly the case here as well, that really it's a right for the worker, but we can't allow you to be mochel or else the whole thing makes no sense. Or, parallel to that, you could say in a different way that no, it's not his right to be mochel because it's not his right, it's not his benefit at all. It's basically a ben adam l'makom, that God is saying, ki avadai heim v'lo avadim li'avadim, that I want the Jews to be available to serve me, and it's not right for them to sell themselves out as slaves to human beings. And it's not about the employer having to give a benefit to the employee, it's to the employee himself. He doesn't have the right to make himself unavailable to the service of God through such a commitment. So there is a perspective to take like that, but it's a little bit less applicable to this Isser. But there's what to say that you could group them together, but it's a stronger point in the context of Pol Yochel Achzu B'Chatzi Ayom. Okay, so there is an interesting discussion, I'll just mention it briefly, but it's interesting, Mar Malkom, also if you have time. So in terms of the nature of the connection between the worker and the employer, the kinyan, to whatever extent there is a kinyan. So first of all, if you have Bava Metzias with you, just take a look at a quick tosfos, a very short tosfos on Menches. Menches and Menalef, the Parak HaZav. So this is a short tosfos Dibra Maschel V'Haboy L'Memshach. So it talks about the Meshicha by a worker. There, in general, in the fourth Parak of Bava Metzias, so the Gemara talks about, before it gets to Ona, it talks about the concept of kinyanim, what affects a kinyan, let's say between two Jews, between a Jew and a non-Jew, what affects a kinyan, is it meshicha, is it maos, is it paying money, or is it picking up an object? So in that context, the Gemara talks about meshicha by a worker, that if the employer picks up the kalim of the worker, is moshech the kalim of the worker, so there is a kinyan there that does not allow the worker to back out. And that's the way the Rishonim describe it, as we'll see in a second, Abayna Tam in this Tosus. And the Torah points out, as others point out, and Ramosha discusses in this Tshuva that we're about to mention in a second, that presumably that's both directions. It's a Kenyan in both directions, that neither can back out on the other. So this short Tosus here, it says, Mikan Omer Abayna Tam, Da Sofer Shehisker Atzmo, Im Mashch Mimenu Kumos. So you have a Sofer, you have a scribe who's renting himself out, who's hiring himself out as a scribe for somebody, So if his employer does mashicha, takes his pen, otar shalo, or let's say the razor for talking about a barber, so ein yechol and shov lachzib behen. So then he can't pull out anymore. Then there's a commitment. So maybe you'll say, v'yim tomar maishnami po'ol. So how is this different from the normal rule that we've been talking about this whole time? By po'ol, the yachol achzibo, who we know has the right to pull out. So says Tosus here, a point that we've alluded to already, Yishlomar de Po'ol Davka, that that's only by a Po'ol. Dechsiv Bei Avadayhein, that's where we have this concern of Avadayhein v'lo Avadim li'Avadim. So you then, in his case, Yochel Achzibo. So then a Po'ol is allowed to go back, because allowed to pull out because of that. V'lo Kavlin. And this is not a distinction that applies to a Kavlin. So Tosus here is introducing in this brief Tosus a couple of points. That there is this fundamental distinction between a po'el and a kavlin, that a po'el who is selling his hours, or selling his time, is fundamentally different from a kavlin who's agreeing to do a certain project. You do the project, so you do the project on your own time, and you're agreeing to do a task, to give your skill, and that's not really comparable to avdus in any significant way. But a po'el who's selling his hours, so that's where we have this fear that he's a little bit like an eved, and that's why we have to have this rule that he can go back, and that's different than what we're talking about here. So here, it sounds like Tosu says that this whole concept of kinyan only applies to a kavlan. There's a kinyan in the kavlan's work, he can't go back, and it's distinct from what we've been talking about in the context of a po'el. However, that being said, there are kinyanim that are relevant to a po'el as well. There are ways in which the kinyan is relevant to a po'el. And this is something we talked about a little bit during the semester, that, for example, if the po'el has started the work and it's already going to cause loss if he pulls out, so then there is, to some extent, a kinyan in the po'el also. And there are other contexts in which this concept of kinyan, which Tosfos is applying at least to a kavlan, is relevant to a po'el too. So whatever the application is, there is a discussion that Moshe Feinstein has in his tshuvas, definitely worth reading. It's a very long tshuva, so I'll just very briefly allude to it. But it's in Choshen Mishpat, the first volume of Choshen Mishpat, Chelek Aleph of Choshen Mishpat, Simen Pei Aleph. It's one of these long tshuvas where he has a lot of anafim, a lot of branches to the tshuva, so he has about five sections. But in that tshuva, so he discusses what is the nature of this kinyan. And he quotes that the Ktzos in Shin Lamed Gimel and Choshen Mishpat, the Ktzos says that essentially it's a kinyan haguf, that the employer has a certain lock on the body, almost sounds like avdus, of the worker for the purpose of this task, for the extent of this work agreement. And others disagreed. Tosus and Maseches Kiddushin and Daf Yud Zayin seems to definitely understand differently. And it goes, again, to the fundamental difference between a eved and a po'el. That when it comes to an eved, there is such a concept as having a acquisition in his guf, in his body. But a po'el doesn't work that way. A po'el, it's an agreement to work. The Tosus is also worth seeing. That Tosus in Kiddushin talks about the fact that the Gemara there says that if you have an eved ivri, so let's say you have an eved ivri supposed to work for you for 6 years. So let's say for a good chunk of that time, let's say about half of that time, he's sick. He can't work. So who loses out? Do you say that therefore the Eved's got to now work an extra 3 years to make up the 3 years he didn't work? Or do you say, no, it's the boss's loss. He has the same 6 years, three of them he didn't get anything out of his Eved. So it sounds like from the Gemara that it's the boss's loss. That basically it's a purchase that he has. It's ki'ilu, he has an item. So if you buy a car, and the car doesn't work, and it doesn't live up to the expectations, but it was sold to you in good faith, but the mice, it's broken, and it doesn't serve the amount of time you thought it would benefit you, that's your loss. You bought it, so you have that loss on your account. You can't go back to the store and say, well, I envisioned I'd get 2 good years of service out of this car, and I only got one, so give me back half my money. So that's true, apparently, when it comes to an eved. But Tosfos says over there that it's not true when it comes to a po'el. If you hire a po'el for a certain amount of time, and he's sick for half the time, so then that's his loss, because you didn't buy him, you bought his work. And if he's not working, so then you're not obligated to pay him for the work. And as we mentioned, we discussed this a little bit during this month, it's not a crazy question, even in a modern context, because we know that in modern work arrangements, you do have some kind of a concept of sick days, where there is an understanding that to a certain extent, your illness, your inability to work, comes off the cheshbon of the boss. You could have paid sick leave. And to a certain extent, it could transcend that. So that's why the Rishonim discuss what exactly is the story. So their Tosfos says that there's a difference between the Poel and the Eved. There's no kinyan in his body. It's an agreement to work. So the way Tosfos seems to understand it, the way Reb Moshe understands the Tosfos, is that basically there is a reciprocal deal between the worker and the boss. That the worker is going to work, and the boss is going to pay him. So it's a reciprocal deal. It's habaha. That's how the nature of their agreement is. So it's different than the Ktos, who saw it as a kinyan haguf in his body himself. And it's also different than the Nesivis. The Nesivis, on the other side of the equation, didn't see it specifically as a reciprocal deal. He just saw the nature of the arrangement is that each party is committing to a certain act. So the employer is committing to pay for the work, and the employee is committing to do the work. And that they have independent self-obligations, and that's the nature of how they relate to each other. So that's just an interesting conceptual framework to keep in mind as we consider a little bit further how these relationships work out. So I just also wanted to bring to your attention, which may also kind of plug into this whole story. So there is an interesting piece in the Sefer Eretz HaTzvi of Mirena Rav Shechter Shlita, where he discusses the nature of Schiras Poelim, the nature of the whole idea that people work for pay and they get paid. How exactly do you look at that? And in that essay, he wants to suggest that there are many indications that it's not what it looks like. That in general, when you have monetary obligations in the Torah, there are two types of obligations. You have a hischayvus haTorah, you have certain concepts in the Torah where the Torah says you do X, you have to pay Y. Certain circumstances the Torah prescribes a penalty for something. You have certain cases where the Torah tells you you have to pay. And then you have what you call hischayvus midas, that somebody makes an obligation out of his own free will. Two people talk, and they decide that, okay, I'll do this for you, you do this for me, I'll pay you, whatever it is. I'll buy this from you, I'll pay you. That's the hischayvus midas. And they normally have different rules. They normally are in different categories. So what would you say about a schiras poel? What category would that be in? It would seem like it would be in two, right? Logically speaking, it would sound like it's a hischayvus midas. So you have a boss, and you have a worker, and they make a deal together, and that's the story. They have essentially committed to do things for each other based on their agreement. Sounds like a straight-out hischayvus midas. So Rav Shechter has a few proofs over there that he thinks it's not true. Thinks that essentially it's hischayvus haTorah, that there is a Torah concept, that there's no specific number given in the Torah, but that there is an inherent idea that when somebody performs a service for someone else, so then there is a concept of schiras poelim that he's entitled to be paid. So what's the number? Torah not going to tell us the number, but whatever the value is of the work, there is hischayvus haTorah to pay that value.
That's not like saying, like, if I build you, buy you a car, you have to pay me back or something.
You would
ask him to do it. It's not like it was a plea that something happened.
Except that it's not always true. That's part of his proof. So that's, so he notes, for example, the Gemara in Bav Metzia, Daf Kuf Aleph, talks about Hayored L'Sada Chavero. Somebody improves somebody else's field, even if he was not commissioned to do so. So then he is due payment for that improvement that he brought about. And that you find that concept is brought in Shulchan Aruch, and you find that in a few places, in the Machlokas and the Mishnah in Subas and Daf Kuf Zayin, between Hanan and the Chachamim of the Mishnah. Of a different case, if somebody pays off the debt of someone else, so then is he entitled to get repaid, and that involves some other details. But the position that he is entitled to get repaid is the view of Chachamim, which isn't actually accepted by Halacha, but Tosus over there and elsewhere understands that what the right to be paid back is based on Schiros Polim. That there is such an idiom, that there is such a concept of Schiros Polim that basically says the worker has the right to get paid the value of the job, even if you don't have an agreement per se that that should be the case. And one of the proofs he brings is from the beginning of the sixth parak over here, from Daf Ayin Vav, where the Gemara talks about a representative of the employer who goes out to hire workers. And the Gemara basically suggests that if the employer, if the representative tells the workers a higher rate than the employer is willing to pay, but it is what the market price is, so then he's still chayav to pay them the market price, even though that's not what his intent was. So how could you have such a circumstance? If it's not based on what his desire was, it's not a mutual agreement. So apparently, notes Rav Shechter, that there is an existing din in the Torah that workers get paid the value of the work. And the idea that the boss and the employer, the boss and the employee get together and they negotiate a salary, so that means if it's not clear from other places what the value is, so then they get to estimate what it should be between the two of them, and that becomes the rate. But absent that negotiation, or instead of that negotiation, there is a going rate. It's interesting also, I'm sure I have to talk about this specifically, but the Gemara there says that let's say, for example, the representative tells the workers that I'll pay you $4 a day. And really the boss had been willing to pay $3 a day. So then the Gemara says that if he said, I'll handle your salary, schar chamalai, so then he pays, the representative pays the $4 and he gets $3 back from the boss. That's what the boss was willing to pay. So there's actually a machlokas, it's brought like that in Shulchan Aruch, there's actually a machlokas between the Bach and the Panim Eiros about whether they're entitled to $4 just because he said $4 regardless of what the rate is. Let's say if the rate is really $3, everyone gets $3. Are they still entitled to $4? Or is it just because this is a scenario where some people get $3 and some people get $4, so therefore $4 is at least on the map somewhere. But if no one gets $4, so then maybe the rate actually is still $3, regardless of what he said, because that's what the rate is. Which would again seem to indicate that it's really a concept that exists already as Schiros Polim, that is independent of any kind of agreement between the people. He mentions that Ravazner has a tshuva about this. Ravazner in the tshuva Shevet Halevi in Chelet Dalet, in the Reish Kavar, has a tshuva about this whole debate. And he notes that the Panim Eiros is inclined to say that it's only true if at least some people get four, otherwise the commitment to four is not binding. But then he concludes that even if you say the commitment to four is binding, it's only because, as we mentioned, I think on Monday, or maybe it was yesterday, that Schiros Polim is excluded from the din of Onah. But since there's no application of Onah to Schiros Polim, so therefore the numbers could be off and there's still a Chiyuv. But the core Chiyuv is really because there is this automatic obligation to pay your work. So that's a very interesting concept. Rav Shechter happens to also actually discuss the Onah point, and he suggests, why is it that there's no Onah by Schiros Polim? So this is also something we touched upon the other day. The Rambam's view is because for this purpose, a Pol actually is compared to an Eved, and Eved is excluded from Onah. But other Rishonim, who the Magid Mishnah quotes, on the side of the page of the Rambam, Hilchos Chiris, the Ramban, and others, maintain that Onah, this overcharging prohibition, doesn't apply to Schiros Polim because it's not a Mecher, it's not a Kinyan. So Rav Shechter wants to say over there, it's a very subtle point, that if you sell an item, so then the two parties negotiate the price. And if that negotiation is out of whack with what it should be, if there's some deception there, so then that's oh no. But when it comes to the Sefiros Poalim, so it's not really based on their negotiation anyway. It's based on this Chiddush HaTorah that the Torah says you have to pay your workers, and therefore maybe that's not subject to the whole parsha of Onah in the first place. It's a subtle distinction, but it's an interesting kind of point. Alex?
That's actually how Rosh Hashanah starts the piece. It's interesting, he mentions that the Gemara says in Bava Kamma and Daf Ayin, the Gemara says over there that Esman Asra Torah, Yafilu Baal Limo. And the Torah prohibits the Beis Hamikdash Esman Zona, that's a pasuk of Chumash, that if somebody pays the wages of a Zona, so that wages is not appropriate, is not committed to the Beis Hamikdash. So the Gemara says, this is true, even if the Zona was, believe it or not, somebody's own mother. So the Rishonim discuss, well, how do you have such a concept? You know, presumably, the idea of the Esman Zona is that one has to pay for the service, and that payment becomes disgusting to the Beis HaMikdash. But here, the person who is using such a service, if it's actually his mother, so then he's Chayiv Misa anyway. So then, what principle kicks in if he's Chayiv Misa? Kimelei v'derabim minei. So the yeshiva next year is going to be Shabbos, but the year after that, those of you who are going to be here 2 years from now, so the yeshiva is learning Elanairis, the topic of Kimelei v'derabim minei. So normally the rule is, if you're Chayiv various things, so you're only Chayiv the most Chomer. So this guy, he has to pay his Zona, but he also has Chayiv Misa, so therefore he shouldn't have to pay anyway. So how does the concept of Esman Zona even come into the discussion? So most of the Rishonim over there say, yeah, Taki doesn't really have to pay, but if for whatever reason he does pay anyway, it still gets the status of Esman Zona. While the Meiri says, no, it's a two different systems. That when we say Kimlei v'derabim minei, we mean that when the Torah has punishments, you only get the most severe punishment. But the obligation to pay for the service here, it's a personal deal. That's nothing to do with the Torah's punishment. So Kimlei v'derabim minei wouldn't apply. It's a hischayvus midas. So he says this. So why is it that the other Rishonim don't say like that? It sounds like the Meiri makes sense. Right? Why do the other Rishonim not say that this is hischayvus midas? Why do they assume that Kimlei v'derabim minei should apply? Because paying for services, Sefiros Poalim, is an automatic din in the Torah, and therefore it kicks in anyway. Again, a kind of a subtle lamdish point, but it's a very interesting idea. So it's not to give, we'll just mention maybe one other example of this chiddush that he is asserting over there, is that the Nimuki Yosef and Hazav, Nimuki Yosef says that when you obligate yourself to pay money, let's say you buy something and you agree to a price, right? So you're being mischayev money. So do we assume that that only applies to value, or can it apply to a specific item? So let's say, for example, I want to buy your car, and I say I'll give you a diamond ring for it. So am I chayev to give you the diamond ring in exchange for the car? Or do you say, no, you're only chayev to pay money, so whatever the value is, you have to pay that money, but you can pay whatever form you want. You don't have to give the diamond ring. It's essentially the question of, can you have a hischayvus? Can you obligate yourself not only in money, but even to give a specific item of the end? So the Mukhi Yosef says that yes, you can commit yourself to giving a ben. If you say, he says over there, you say you're going to pay in chitin, you're going to pay in the grains, so then you have to pay exactly that type of payment you describe. So they ask, this is the Gemara of the Zara and Daf Samach Gimel, that the Gemara says that if you tell your worker you're going to pay him with a certain item, you don't have to give him that item. You have to give him just the cash value. So apparently your obligation only goes to the value, doesn't go to any specific item. So once again, it says, no, you see there's a difference. That when you're paying your worker, you don't have to pay your worker because of your agreement. You have to pay your worker because the Torah says there's a chiyuv tashlumin for Sefiros Poalim. And therefore, that obligation kicks in. And it's not based on your agreement. So you can't insist that it has to be in a specific format, because the whole chiyuv doesn't come from that agreement. It comes from this din in the Torah that kol would get paid. So those are interesting points, and some of them are, again, very subtle, but it all goes to one broader finish, that this idea of paying your workers, which you would think is a function of a deal between two people, that maybe that's how we should see it. And yet we see here that apparently no, that it's transcending that, that there is a concept in the Torah that the worker gets paid, that transcends any deal that you're making with him, and it's not just subject to your agreement. So what's that based on?
So that would mean that if someone would, you know, do meaningless or pointless work, then you might not have to pay them because they didn't have any benefit for the boss.
Maybe. It's also true if you would do it on his own, that you wouldn't have to pay him for sure. So the cases of Hayur and
someone hires him.
Right, so if you hire him, so then you get back to the question we talked about yesterday, if you could hire him in the first place to do that. But if you hire him, then presumably it's at least your commitment. Right here, the whole chiddush here is that separate from your commitment, there is a chiyuv anyway.
They could both work.
Right, presumably they could both work, yeah. So I would assume. So I thought that presumably what this whole chiddush is maybe reflecting is it's all an extension of ki avadayim, lo avadim li avadim, that we find all of these rules set up in order to keep us away from avdus. That the Torah says avdus is not forbidden ever since the Tzias Mitzrayim, ever since we were freed from avdus, we were given the opportunity to become avadim of God, so it's not right for us ever to agree to any other form of avdus. So maybe that reflects itself in essentially all of these halachas that we've been seeing, that Pol Yochel Achzer V'Chatzi Hayom and all the different versions of Pol Yochel Achzer V'Chatzi Hayom, of the prohibitions of avodas parech and avodas aved, and maybe also this idea that there's an inherent right to be paid, and which is also the flip side of a little bit we discussed yesterday. We mentioned Rebbeinu Yonah, that Rebbeinu Yonah has this chiddush that if you're pressuring people to work, to do something for you that they're not really willing to do, they just do it because they feel obligated to. So that's a violation of that iser. And we posed the question yesterday, the Sfarim asked, that the Torah is talking about demeaning work, or overly hard work, or meaningless work. Why is Rebbeinu Yonah applying it to any work just because you don't want to do it? And we discussed the possibility that it's all an extension of this idea of Kili B'nei Yisrael Avadim, so to make somebody work when they're not willing to is against the Ratzon HaTorah. And so too, when somebody is working without getting paid, or at least we don't recognize their inherent right to get paid, so then that's also perhaps a violation of this concept. So I don't know if that's really what it's based on. I once asked Schefter if he thought that was connected to the Sefer. He discusses it just in the abstract, that there is such an idea of Sefer's Poland being an inherent obligation. So I asked him if it made sense to say that it was connected to Avadayim, so he wasn't committal one way or another. So we're just tentatively suggesting that they could be connected ideas. What does contradict it a little bit, that there's a connection, that in that same piece, he also suggests in the middle that other types of schiras, such as rental of items, might also have a similar type of concept. Then you have to see whether or not that could really still be fit into the same theory. But in any event, what seems to emerge is that there is essentially this idea that a pole gets paid for his time, and that is a Torah concept that transcends what the agreement is between the parties. Nonetheless, all of that being said, just to call your attention, that there is a possibility that even if you have a worker who's not working, he's not getting paid, but he is working, but he's doing the jobs of a pole, he still may have the dinim of a pole for certain intents and purposes, and we'll have to try to see how that plays out, with possibly some differences, and some of the Sfarim point out that we find that the right of a pole to back out is limited, as we mentioned, One of the limitations is that if he, by backing out, he's going to cause an actual loss to the employer, so then he's not entitled to back out. So that might only be true by a paid poem. An unpaid poem may not have that restriction, and that's something that we'll have to figure out a little bit. We could also just kind of reiterate a point that we mentioned the other day, but it's now understandable in this context. It's also a point that Shapta discusses there, that the difference between a Shomer Sacher and a Shomer Chinam, that we know that there are different chiyuvim, there are different liabilities. If somebody is getting paid to watch something and somebody is watching something as a favor, they have different categories in terms of what they're liable for if something happens to the item. But there's more to it, because the Gemara says in Bava Metzia and Daf Tzadi Aleph that there's a whole different concept, that the Shomer Chinam is supposed to just do what the owner would do. Watch it, kiddinatri inshi. However the boss would have watched, however the owner would have watched it, that's the level of diligence he has to have. But once he's getting paid, and once he's a Shomer Sacher, so then he turns into a poel. And once he's a poel, so then he has the halachas of a poel. A poel has to work with all of his kayach, with all of his energy. So too, that becomes the obligation of Shomer Sacher. So it's not just a detail, it fundamentally enters into a whole different category because of this whole concept of a poel. So essentially what emerges here is that there seems to be a specific construct in the Torah of a poel. Sounds like it's not just a set of agreements between two parties, but that there is an inherent definition, a vision that the Torah has of what a poel is. And as we also mentioned, one of the ramifications will be, it's a whole separate sugya, God willing, we'll get to, is the idea of lo solin pula sacher. The Torah says there's a specific requirement in terms of how and when the poel is paid. There are all kinds of details that come into effect that transcend the negotiations between the parties, that are a function of the fact that Torah seems to have a specific vision of poel. Okay, so just quickly, so what did we speak about today? So we just added to the whole Rabbi Levine discussion is a thought exercise as to why you should have the benefit of these minor privileges such as phone calls, because theoretically you have the right to quit and say you'll use the downtime to make your phone calls and then get your job back. And even though the halacha does not obligate the employer to rehire the worker, he lets the worker quit, it does not obligate him to rehire him. In Metzias, he would be rehired because it makes more sense to hire him than anyone else who's going to have to be looked for. So therefore, rather than go through that whole back and forth drama, it makes sense just to assign those rights to begin with, as long as they remain within the structure of what would be reasonable and where the boss would agree if he was forced to go through that whole drama. And then we talked about the fact that to whatever extent this issur of losir de befarach applies, so there's also an issur in the Torah future later to even allow it to happen, so that would expand the parameters even further. And then we discussed after that a little bit Rav Moshe's tshuva about what the nature of the kinyan of a worker is, whether it's a kablan, as Tosfos points out in the past, that there is a kinyan because he can't go back as distinct from a poel, or to whatever extent it applies to a poel as well. So three basic models. Is it a kinyan hagofu, as Tosfos understands, or as Tosfos sees it, specifically not that way, but it's a reciprocal deal to work and to get paid on the two sides, or the way Nesivos understood it, that it's not about reciprocity, it's that each side obligates themselves to a certain service, whether it's working or getting paid. And then we talked about Reshechter's point, where he maintains that even though we have these categories of Hischaivis Midas and Hischaivis HaTorah, and you might think that hiring a worker is a straight-out Hischaivis Midas, there are a lot of indications that it is a Chiyuv HaTorah, as reflected by the fact that if somebody does service to someone without being told to, like Yoru Tov Sechavero, so he's entitled to get paid for that. About the fact that the Gemara in our parak talks about the workers being hired at a rate that the boss would not have been happy with, but if they're going on rates, there's a chiyuv to pay them. And we talked about Ravazin's tshuva about the machlokas between the Bach and the Panimiris, a little bit, and how that halacha applies, and a little bit about the involvement of Onah in the story, maybe why there's no Onah by Kolim in terms of how the rate is being set. The question of why Kimle of the Rabbi Minei might apply to Spirit Kolim, because maybe it's not. My Schaivus Midas, it's essentially what the Torah is insisting, the whole question of whether you can obligate yourself to pay a ba'en, pay an object rather than money. The book Yosu says you can, but the Gemara sounds like in reference to your workers that you cannot. And again, the explanation is because your obligation to pay your workers is not based on your deal. It's based on this concept of the Torah of Sefiras Poalim is a concept in and of itself. And therefore, there is a rate that exists, but if they negotiate something else, that becomes the rate. But otherwise, there is this abstract concept that they're entitled to be paid. So we suggested that all of this is meant to be in conjunction, perhaps, with the idea of and many of the halachas that we've seen here emerge from this idea that on the one hand is a balance, on the one hand the poel has a strong obligation towards his employer to work with kol kocho, but at the same time he is not allowed to be an eved, and we saw the same ambiguity whether it's he is not allowed to make himself an eved or the boss is not allowed to treat him like an eved, but either way there are these exclusions and maybe this is one of them. The idea that a poel gets paid, not just because that's the agreement, but because that's the very nature of the concept. And we discussed whether or not that's a perfect theory, but that's one possible way of looking at it. And then we mentioned you could also have a poel who's not getting paid, and that there may be some differences there as well. Okay, so any questions about any of that? Everything makes sense, more or less? Okay, so again, so we'll stop with that for tomorrow. We'll look at Parsh a little bit. And then for next week, so whether or not you have the Mar Makomos, I'll try to send it out to the whole list, but whether or not you have Mar Makomos, it's kedai just to go straight in the 6th and 7th Prakim and try to cover as much Gemara as you can, and we'll try to go roughly straight over there and try to cover some of those ideas. All right, everyone should have a wonderful evening. Should be only good things.